From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a remote island in the Pacific Ocean, a place called Henderson Island. A gorgeous place, the kind you might see on a show like Lost. So much so that it became a UNESCO Heritage Site in 1988 for its ecology that was, quote, practically untouched by humans. Practically being the operative word here, because, well, guess what? Even though you won't find humans on Henderson Island, you will now find plenty of evidence of humans. That's because Henderson Island is now covered with more than 37 million pieces of waste plastic. Scientists said on Monday that every day now, 3,500 bits of garbage wash up on Henderson Island shores. Jennifer Lavers is a marine and Antarctic studies researcher, and she said what's happened on this remote paradise shows there is no escaping plastic pollution. When humans are careless with garbage, it affects the entire world. And so a couple of recent announcements caught our attention. Both the Brighton School District and CMAQ announced that they're trying to go zero waste. And we kind of wondered, what exactly is zero waste? How can places with thousands of people, either in one day for an event or throughout the year, how can you really produce no waste? Is it just a marketing term, or is it an ambitious but achievable effort? And what does it cost? We asked the people behind the zero waste efforts to come in and explain from a number of different angles, and I will introduce our guests now. Cassidy Putney is from Impact Earth. That's a company based in Rochester that helps organizations reduce waste and become more sustainable. Cassidy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also here is Lynn Frieda, who is the executive director of CMAQ. Lynn, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Dr. Kevin McGowan is the superintendent of the Brighton Central School District. I asked for anyone else from Brighton, but they sent Kevin. I joke because I see you so often. It's nice to see you again.
This chair is very comfortable, Evan. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this co-host audition.
It is. Wear it out, my friend. Wear it out. All right, so I'm going to start with you, Kevin. I don't know if you saw the story in Henderson Island, but once in a while you see these stories of like this landmass of garbage in the ocean, or this week it's the story of this beautiful island that's kind of overrun with plastic. You know, what do you think when you see those images? For me, it's just sort of like I'm kind of embarrassed for our species when I see that.
I feel the same way. I feel, as the parent of small children and, you know, just anybody, any human being, any citizen that looks at what we're producing and what a shame it is and what it does to the environment and the impact that we'll have long term. And I worry about what kind of world our kids will have to enjoy and their kids as well. So, you know, I think often as an educator, what can we do to teach kids about much better habits in that area? How can we as an organization, as a large organization, make an impact ourselves? But also then what are we teaching kids when they leave us about being caretakers?
Lynn, when I look at that, I have this contrast. I think of like the Sistine Chapel and what man can achieve. I think of, well, think about CMAQ. You've got some great bands coming in this summer. You've got this beautiful music. It is incredible heights of human achievement, and then we can also do that, an island of garbage. And you know, what do you think when you see stuff like that?
Yeah, I think we all need to be good corporate citizens and community citizens and do our part. I think individually we all have something that we need to do to give back and figure out how we can decrease our impact. But I think from a CMAQ perspective, we looked at it that we bring in over 100,000 people a season, and if you see that lawn at the end of the night, it's... pretty scary. Yeah. So we wanted to do what we could to decrease our impact.
All right. Well, we're going to be talking about that coming up here. Cassidy Putney, I mentioned from Impact Earth, which is, let's take a little bit of a look at the history of the company. It goes back, what, 3 years now in Rochester?
Yep, 3 years in Rochester. We originally started as a grant writing company. We worked with other organizations and institutions in the community that wanted to work on green projects. We worked with them to help them write grants to work on their projects. And after a little while, we realized we wanted to work on our own green projects. We wanted to work on making an impact in our community, but doing it ourselves. And so we actually had an intern that went to Bonnaroo that summer, and he said, hey, they have this really cool waste station set up.
What is Bonnaroo?
Bonnaroo is a music festival.
I'm so old. Bonnaroo, all right, so it's a music festival?
Yes, it's in like the Midwest area.
Okay.
And it's a huge show. I think it's like 4 or 5 days. And they basically had volunteers that were manning waste stations to help the people that were at the show sort their garbage. And so they didn't obviously have anything to do with inputs at that point, but they were just hoping to recycle as much as possible. And so the intern came back and he said, hey, we should really look at zero waste. You know, nobody's really doing it in our community. Why can't we? And so we ended up asking a bunch of festivals that summer, hey, would you be interested in having some zero waste services? And everyone said yes, which was a really exciting opportunity for us. And it kind of just has blossomed from there.
Okay. And I assume there's a different approach if you're doing a festival or an event versus, you know, a Brighton school district or an office park or something like that, yes?
Absolutely. And that's been big for us. You know, obviously both CMAC and the school district are very different venues. One is an institution. It's very educational. Obviously, there are going to be a lot of children there. Whereas CMAC, it's adults and they're partying and enjoying the music. And that's more of a special event for us. And that's what we've been doing for the last 3 years. So special events is something that we're really confident in. Whereas for the school district, this is an opportunity for us to grow and learn together and kind of develop a whole system and process to educate and make a difference.
I'm going to eventually ask you if it's easier to get kids to get on board than adults. Yeah, I have seen what the lawn looks like at the end of a CMAC concert, but we'll get there coming up here. Roughly how many clients are you working with now? Are you allowed to tell me here? You know, I mean, how big is Impact Earth and how big do you want to be?
Obviously, CMAC and the school district are two of our larger clients.
Yeah.
But we do, I think we have 123 events this summer. Mm-hmm. So that obviously some are with the same organizations, like a farmer's market every week. But then there's other things like we have CMAC is in that count of 123. And then we also work with Corning Glass in Fairport, and we've been working with them for the last 2 years as well, and so that's on a more of a monthly basis.
Okay, and when we talk about, say, a farmer's market might be a mm-hmm. client, do you have, are you open to if a company calls, if you know, so if they're in sort of an office setting, are they the possible client? Is anybody sort of a possible client?
Absolutely, anybody okay. and everybody is a client.
All right, I'm just trying to get a sense for what you're doing. All right, so zero waste though. Okay, so Cassie, I have to just ask if zero waste actually means zero, because I think if you get to like a 90% diversion from a landfill, or is it 80%, you get this zero waste designation, and I'm going, wait a second. So let's explain what the terminology actually means.
Absolutely. So zero waste means a host of different things. It's mostly self-defined. There aren't a lot of zero waste certifications out there, at least in the United States right now. But when you look at more of a global scale, places in Europe are doing about a 90 to 95% landfill diversion is equal to a zero waste certification. And so for right now, for instance, the school district, they're in the first 3 years, we're hoping to get to an 80% landfill diversion. And that's because it's a huge district. Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts in the situation, and it's an evolution, so it's going to take us a little while to get there. But for the district, the ultimate goal would be to get to about a 90% landfill diversion rate, which would certify them as a zero waste facility.
And is it, this is not me just trying to do PR spin for you, this is an honest question, is it zero waste as a designation because ultimately we're probably never going to be able to recycle everything that we create and consume, but most can be diverted from the landfill? There's always going to be a small amount that does need to end up going there? Or could you get to 100% diverted from landfill?
I think today we can't get to 100% because of the current materials and the type of culture and society we live in and the products that we have. But I don't see why in the next 5-10 years it could be a complete 100% landfill diversion.
That's a values choice based on the actual materials that we're choosing to produce with?
Yes.
That kind of a thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So there's kind of a goal, and for a festival or a school district or a company that is not going down the zero waste road, how much, you know, I mean, you're going from what to what? If you get to 80% in Brighton and then 90% diverted from landfills, but you're starting with, I kind of want to get a sense for where you're starting versus where you're going. How much is actually going to the landfill?
Absolutely. So obviously it depends on where you're working. In a school district, you know, to be at 60%, for instance, would be pretty normal for a baseline of landfill diversion. So far, just since we've been working on events at the school district, like ice cream socials and activity nights, with us there, with our stations, we've been able to achieve over 85% landfill diversion at these events. And so, you know, sometimes I think the gap will be larger, and it'll depend, like, especially in a manufacturing setting, it might be a closer gap to close because, you know, they're already trying to be the most efficient system as possible. So going from 70 to 80 won't be a huge jump. But for, you know, a CMAC where, you know, they used to just have just one trash can. That was the option. And so everything was
going. Yeah, it's like illegal to recycle though. I'm mostly kidding. But I mean, you know, but people are drinking, they're having
Absolutely.
Fun, and everything goes in one big, mm-hmm. at least that those are the festivals I've been at the past, and that's not to malign CMAC. That's just sort of a broad description. It's also a look at human nature, which we are not being very mindful sometimes when we are drinking and having fun at those events. So
Definitely.
You're saying you're starting with a much lower level of diversion and can get to much, much stronger.
Absolutely. And you know, like I said before, it's an evolution. So we're in the first year for both the school district and CMAC. And so it's not going to be perfect our first year. We're going to have to work out the system to make it a better process. But over the next 3 years, I would say both facilities would be able to achieve zero waste.
Okay. Let me start with Kevin, and then we're going to talk to Lynn. We'll talk about the very, you know, sort of the different approaches and how they're going about this. In the meantime, listeners, if you want to weigh in, I have an interesting email, which I'll get to later, but if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I want to hear from you. If you have any questions about zero waste, sure, but you know, I'm also curious to know whether it's at work for you or at home. I think there's a broader question of whether we are sort of recycling enough, if we are figuring things out quickly enough when it comes to the waste that we have. And certainly on Monday nights when the garbage goes out on my street, I look around and I'm going, I feel like I could do more. So, you know, I think it's a good time for us to be thinking about what we're doing here. Kevin, for your district, how did you end up, you know, getting in touch not only with this company but deciding to go down the zero waste path?
So years ago, we had parents who really were driving this discussion in the district. And we're very fortunate to be in a community where people are very environmentally conscious and have these discussions often. Color Bright and Green is a group within the community that has been a real driver behind some of these initiatives. So our parents started to recycle milk cartons in our cafeterias in the elementary buildings. And it expanded to recycling clubs that students were involved in. And over several years, just a rapid growth in the amount of environmental awareness and those types of activities. We have a K-12 environmental committee that's been having conversations around this. And about a year ago, we started to embark on a discussion to involve Impact Earth and look at zero waste. So it was really driven by parents. You know, there's an interesting question here about value judgments, and particularly with a public entity and how that could look, or whether or not we are. I think everybody in this room might agree that these are great ideas, but not everybody in society or communities might agree with that. And in our organization, we think often about the investment of public dollars and how we are making those decisions on behalf of community members. So we've also had to show, in terms of reducing the amount of waste, that this could also be a cost benefit for us.
Now, hold on. Just to make sure here, I understand. I mean, I understand if you're like building luxury condos on those trash islands in the ocean, maybe you're not down with this movement. But who else is not down with this idea, at least?
Well, I'm not sure a whole lot of people will admit they're not down with it. And actually, in our okay. community, nobody has said that they're not
okay.
down with it. I'm getting into this broader question of, for example, last year when we were exploring a capital project and we talked to some people in the community about, could you make it more environmentally friendly? And we would love to. However, and we did in our current capital project do some of those things, we always feel like we need to also present a balance between return on investment and just that kind of conversation.
Sure, okay.
Because people do ask that question, well, that's great that you'd like solar panels, or that's great that you'd like to do that, but I don't know that I would necessarily want to invest my money in that.
Sure. So it can be a cost issue.
Right. But when we can show return on investment, that kind of changes that conversation. And when you can show that, everybody seems to be in favor of that. Everybody seems to think then that's a good idea. So for us, I think that return on investment issue, though, is also the investment we're making in kids and the investment we're making in teaching them. So it doesn't have to show an incredible cost benefit, but it has to be reasonable. And then we can really talk about the educational benefit of that. And that's the direction that it's gone for us.
And so as you try to work towards, 80% diversion as a kind of a first goal, is that right?
You bet.
And then eventually maybe 85, 90% diversion. What does that really look like inside your school buildings?
So,
and what will that look like?
Right. So particularly for evening after school events, but then we'll start next year in one of our cafeterias at French Road, the 3-5 building. It means receptacles for everything, but separated, and having volunteers there to help kids make a better decision as to where they put their trash so that we can divert from the landfill.
And is this... is half the battle just educating people to stop just going straight to a garbage can?
You know, I think Cassidy will answer it much better. But my understanding is I've asked that same question.
Yeah.
You know, when some of these ideas first came to me, it was, so this really is just about simply teaching people to make a better choice. It's that and also choosing better materials. So it's a mindfulness about the materials that you're choosing and getting the right materials in place so that they're compostable, recyclable materials as well.
Cassidy, what cannot be recycled or diverted?
At this point, styrofoam. That's our biggest hurdle so far, is looking at the lunch trays in the cafeterias. Like Kevin said, in the fall, we'll be working with the 3-5 building, French Road Elementary School, and they'll be the first cafeteria to go zero waste. And so that's definitely our first hurdle, is getting the styrofoam out of the lunchroom.
Once in a while, I see, you know, like a fast food container that's still like styrofoam. And I'm going like, what year is this? What is this, 1986? How are they doing that anymore? But okay, so styrofoam's an issue.
Absolutely.
That's the big one. Yeah. Are there others that really can't?
At this point, I would say no.
Okay, so then do we need more? Is it more individualized receptacles? We hear a lot about single stream and separated stuff. I mean, what are the challenges there? What do you do about that?
So the system that we're going to set up in the cafeteria, for instance, will be separated little bins. And so there'll be an organics, which will have food waste. And then we're working with the district on procurement. So making sure that things like trays or other like forks and knives will be compostable materials so that they can go right in that organics bin. They'll be recyclable for things like the milk cartons and cans and bottles that can go in there. And then there will be a small landfill container as well. But actually yesterday, Elizabeth and I went to the French Road Elementary School Tree Huggers Club, which is this great little club of environmental students. And they're
called the Tree Huggers Club?
Yes, they're incredible. They're so passionate, and they knew so much more about organics and composting than I knew, definitely, when I was their age. And they started this little project where they have recycling rangers. So during the day in the cafeteria, they have little shifts where they stand near the recycling and trash bins, and they help the other students, the younger students in the school, to properly recycle their lunches and stuff like that. And so yesterday when we told them there was going to be an additional composting bin, they were so excited that they were like already coming up with names for what they're going to be called, the little students that'll be volunteers, and they're just already excited to be a part of the educational system.
I feel like food recycling and food waste recycling is, I mean, it's not new, but it feels much more prevalent now. You know, much less of just tossing food waste or unused food in the garbage, whether it's in people's homes or at company locations. I mean, that's probably an easy thing to do that a lot of us don't do, yes?
Absolutely. And when you look at percentages for landfill diversion, about 80% of your landfill waste is usually food waste because of the water content. So just by diverting just food waste away from the landfill, that's going to make the numbers look way better.
Okay. So what I want to do is get a couple of listener comments, and we're going to talk about what CMAQ is doing as well. But let me start with Joan in Hilton on the phone with a comment and a question. Go ahead, Joan.
Hi. Great program. I'm a big recycler, and after traveling to San Francisco, they do have bins for composting, and I was wondering if you guys know how close Rochester may be coming to having that option, too. I would compost myself, but my compost bin is underwater now because I live near Lake Ontario.
So you're saying in addition to recycling bins picked up, compost bins that will get picked up?
Right.
Okay, so on garbage day, you put compost bins out. It's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. Cassidy, you heard anything about that around here? Is there talk about that?
There definitely is talk. There is a couple organizations that do residential compost pickup, but they're very secluded. They're in certain areas. Mm-hmm. And then obviously like places like RIT, for instance, they work with another organization that takes their compost from a composting pilot that they have there as well. But from a wider standpoint, I don't think so at this point.
I think it was probably a couple of years ago we did a show on composting. And Kat Schwarz, remind me after this hour to look that up because it's probably been a couple of years. That lit the phones on fire. I could not believe how many people had questions on composting, ratios of, you know, how much when it comes to food versus sort of brown, you know, leaves, things like that. I learned a ton. What can you put in? What can you not? Eggs, meat, shells, things like that. It was a great conversation, but it's been a couple of years. And so I want to thank Joan and Hilton for that call because that's a good reminder to us to kind of update where we are with maybe public composting programs, if they're on the way or not, and also to answer questions on that because that's a great subject. Tim in Pittsford writes to us and says, I would love to go zero waste in our household as I am a recycling nerd, but I often wonder how much of the materials we recycle actually get recycled. I feel good about myself when I put the bins out, but I really have no idea what happens after they get emptied into the truck. That's from Tim. What would you tell him, Cassidy?
That give us a call, send us an email. We'd love to help you.
Well, I mean, do we know offhand? I mean, are you similarly concerned when bins go out that this is a recycling bin, but is it really going to get recycled?
Absolutely. And I think it depends a lot on the hauler and the facility it's going to, because oftentimes things like plastic bags will end up in the recycling. And if it's going to a single stream recycling facility, plastic bags end up, you know, junking up their system, and then they're not able to properly sort. And so that's definitely a concern.
It's a great question, Tim. And I kind of think the same thing. And I certainly hope Single Stream is successful. We're seeing, I think, more single stream, aren't we, Cassidy?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So I see the phone ringing. If you want to call the program, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. If you're just joining us, we're talking about what zero waste really means with Cassidy Putney of Impact Earth. That's a company based in Rochester that helps organizations reduce waste and become more sustainable. Dr. Kevin McGowan, the superintendent of the Brighton Central School District, which is embarking on a zero waste initiative there. And Lynn Frieda from CMAC. Decided to go zero waste. When did that conversation come up at CMAC?
It came up during the off season, probably in the winter time. One of the artists that we were looking at actually has an environmental rider, and had a lot of requests.
This is cool. I love this story.
It's pretty cool.
Are you allowed to say who it is?
It was Jack Johnson.
Okay.
We did not secure him this year, but we're hoping what we're doing will bring him to the venue next year.
Wait, did he not come because of the environmental situation?
Not because of the environmental.
Okay.
It just didn't work in routing.
Just didn't work in routing. Okay, cool.
So that made us really take a look at it. We've seen over the years when artists come, even in the backstage area, they'll ask to have water not in plastic bottles, to have us use reusable cups and things like that. So we have to change everything on a different show based on the artist and what the requests are. So we decided, well, if that's what they're looking for, why don't we just actually take a bigger look at this and see how we can turn the whole venue around? We should be doing this anyways.
All right, so this is a great story. Let's peel this back a little bit. First of all, because we hear a lot about riders, but we don't often get to see what they look like. So are more artists bringing in these environmental concerns?
They are.
They are.
Jack Johnson is definitely a leader in the industry. He has his own environmental rider that even to accept the offer, so to even take a look at it, we had to go back, and it was an 8-page rider, and we had to detail out what we would be doing to meet those environmental requirements. And that's really how the conversation started with Impact Earth. And once talking to them and realizing that it's something that we could do for the full season, it really makes sense for us to do, that's really when we got the conversation going and made it into a larger initiative.
What are some of those items on his list then?
I mean, there was things from like the toilet paper needed to be recycled toilet paper, water stations throughout the venue. They request that they do not sell any single time use plastic bottles during the show that he's at. Even like LED lighting, if that would be an opportunity at the venue, back of house. So just a lot of different things that some of them, things that we're already doing, and others would be out of the box requests.
Wow. I say this as I sip from a single-use WXXI water bottle. These are the worst. Why do we do this? Why do we do this? I'm looking at you, Rob Braden, the engineer. You don't know? I don't know. But one thing that we do is whenever guests leave water bottles, I always tell them, the leftover water goes to the plants in my office, and I will recycle the plastic. Because something appalling. It's like an 80% plastic non-recycle rate or something awful. I mean, I think I'm probably speaking out of school, Cassidy, but I think it's safe to say that the plastic recycle rate in this country is not very good.
No, not at all.
Okay. All right. So very interesting. So before I get to your phone calls, because the phones have blown up again, let me just kind of close the loop with CMAC here. So these riders come in and you're looking at them. I mean, I wonder if when you look at Jack Johnson's request, were you immediately like, you know what, we don't have this, but this is doable. We could get here. Or do you look at this and go, that's unrealistic, no way? Or is it inspiring? Do you think, okay, we're not there yet, but I mean,
it's a combination of all of it, really. Yeah. I think, especially in the off season when we're doing a million different things, we're like, man, this is going to be a lot for one show. But we go through line by line and figure out, we can't do this, but we can do this. And it's the same for every artist. We do as much as we possibly can and come up with alternatives if there's something that we can't do. And so really, his rider was the catalyst, though, to start these initiatives, and I think now we really have everyone wrapped around and everyone's really excited to see how it goes this season.
What's the weirdest rider you ever got, by the way, unrelated to environment?
I wish I had a better story. They're all pretty normal. I would say LL Cool J, he asked for a dozen roses, which I thought was bizarre, but he actually handed them out to women in the audience, which was also a little bizarre. So
we should do a whole hour on what artists are saying behind the scenes at CMAC. Okay, so Lynn, you also mentioned water, by the way. Water. Jack Johnson had water stations in his, I think water was, I got to release somewhere. Here it is. I mean, what's going on with water?
Sure. So we also have partnered with Just Water,
okay.
Which is a company that was started by Jaden Smith, which is Will Smith's son, and his tutor, actually. And his tutor's from Glens Falls. So the water is sourced from Glens Falls, and they actually have a really cool business model where they give back to work on the water quality in Glens Falls. So they are a for-profit, but they're really giving back and taking a look at where the water piece of that stands. And then it's a boxed water that the cap is made out of sugar cane. And so it's a very unique product that we're excited to have at the venue this year. And it also comes with their influencers, if you will. They have a lot of celebrities that have invested in the company, and we're hoping that tying it in will be the first Just Water venue. It's a similar situation. We can also drive some interest in the entertainment side of it as well.
Okay. Well, let's do this. I'm late for the only break of the hour, and so many phone lines are filled up. Let's work through your phone calls when we come back. And I also want to kind of set the scene again. So when you go to CMAC for your next show, or you're going to go later this summer, what's going to look different? And then the question on just educating, you know, sort of the concert going public, what that process is. Cassidy will tell us how important a piece just educating and what our expectations are. I mean, it's one thing, again, if you're going to the office every day and you're going zero waste, if you're going to school every day and you're going zero waste. But if you're going out to a concert venue, how much work you have to do to educate the concert going public to change behavior and habits. So it's all part of it as we talk zero waste, and we'll get those phone calls in starting right after this break. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. When people ask me to go out and speak in the community, I'm going to start doing riders. I'm going to do environmental riders, but also just for Lynn, I'm going to do some weird roses and things like that.
Perfect.
Yeah, well, you know, LL Cool J and me. Let's get to Kim in Rochester next on the phones. Go ahead, Kim.
Yes, hi. First off, awesome show, so thank you.
Thanks.
For doing this. Second, I wondered about straws. I work with a lot of different environmental and recycling groups, and one thing we have the hardest trouble with are straws and dealing with children and young adults, and then into adulthood. You go to a bar, everyone uses a straw, they put a straw in your drink whether you want it or not, fast food restaurants, and I assume cafeterias offer them too. So I just wanted to know what Brighton's going to do about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for the phone call. Good question. You guys are looking at each other. Cassidy's looking at Kevin. Kevin's looking at Cassidy.
So this is definitely for Brighton in particular. This is about procurement. So we do recommend a particular straw that is compostable. And so that will be something that if the Brighton School District wants to purchase and have at their cafeterias, that will be offered to them. In other sense, straws vary on recyclability. I'm not an expert on it by any means, but my rule of thumb that I was taught a little while ago was that if it is opaque, you usually can recycle it. If it is see-through, however, it's not recyclable.
Ooh, boy, that's not anything I would have assumed. So, all right, Kevin, that may be a money decision. I mean, yes, and so much of this, I think, you know, people will probably wonder if you're trying to go zero waste at Brighton, is it a big outlay? And you talked about sort of return on investment, but in generally speaking, is this a big expense?
You know, Evan, I don't think I'm really well prepared to be able to say. It's not that I'm trying to evade it. I just don't know enough about the cost differences yet between those. I just know that, again, that, you know, it depends on the volume. It depends on our district-wide commitment. Mm-hmm. We can't afford to, I think, be overly generous in some of those investments, again, because looking at that return on investment. But again, finding the balance. I mean, we invest in instructional materials all the time. So how can we leverage investments we're already making? We're already spending money on straws. The question is how much more? Because that cost eventually gets passed on to everybody in the community. I just don't know the exact difference in those prices, okay. And we'll have to look at that. And then how that balances with how much waste we can defer from going to the landfill and try and keep that to be a reasonable investment.
Okay. And by the way, before I jump back on your phone calls, Cassidy Putney from Impact Earth, that's a company that is helping organizations make these kinds of decisions. And they're online where? Where can people find you?
ImpactEarthInc.org.
ImpactEarthInc.org. You want to check it out there. Back to the phone calls we go. Caleb is in Pittsford. Go ahead, Caleb.
Hi. I called to commend you guys on this work and to say that I think people are open to it. And just for an example, we were vacationing in Houston, in Galveston, and just had the best family vacation for spring break. But the only thing was that they don't recycle at all there, and we had a kitchen unit, and so it felt depressing not to recycle. And we did take one trip 20 miles to Walmart to recycle our plastic bottles. But my point is that I think people are going to be open to this. And then it also kind of led to a question, how much resistance do you find to the work you're doing? And just one more quick comment, I'm on my way into Wegmans, who seem very committed as far as their products. Like, I think some of their plastic things are made from corn syrup or something. But I'm confused by their new containers. And so I'm going to fill out a comment card when I go in. So I'll take your responses off the air, and great work, guys.
All right, thank you, Caleb, and I know they appreciate that. I certainly don't know the containers he's talking about at Wegmans, and so, Caleb, send me an email after you talk to them, because I certainly don't want to malign Wegmans at all. I'm sure they're very interested in making sure they're sustainable. I'm also struck by some of what we heard yesterday from Steve Curwood, the host of Living on Earth since 1990 on NPR, who was in Rochester yesterday. And, you know, he echoed some of the themes we've heard from Adam Frank and others, which is, it was one thing when we didn't really know all of those packing peanuts and styrofoam and Big Mac and styrofoams and things like that. But we know now. We don't really have excuses anymore. We have to make values choices, and there are impacts to our choices. So Caleb, I'm with you. If I traveled and I was in a state where there was a very little recycling, it would be weird. I haven't been to Texas in a long time. But he is asking about pushback. Kevin, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, some potential pushback, but how would you answer his question on any pushback you're getting?
Well, I feel a little bit badly because I feel like I almost overplayed that issue.
Okay.
Because it's really not, we're not getting any pushback. We're getting nothing but positive. In fact, before the show, I was talking with our Impact Earth partners about how incredible the feedback has been, even more so than we would have predicted. It's just always us trying to be reasonable about that conversation. But, you know, we think a lot about our role as an organization and driving change in our teaching and thinking about the impact we're having long term on kids and their thinking and what we can do organizationally. And so it's a really good investment to be making. We're not getting any pushback at all. We're just always trying to think about that potential.
Sure. And Lynn, what about you? What do you expect in terms of response from your concert goers at CMAC?
Well, we aren't really too sure what to expect.
Sure.
But we're starting the season with Dave Matthews and Tim Reynolds, and they actually they support a lot of environmental initiatives with some volunteers at their shows every year anyways. So we're hoping that that's a good way to kind of get our feet wet. It'll be a sold-out show, but it's people that are already pretty environmentally conscious. So that's going to be a real test to see how they respond to it. I think it'll really be show-dependent as all the demographics kind of change, but we're pretty optimistic that people will follow suit and engage with the volunteers, learn more about it, and follow the way that we want it to go.
All right. So before I jump back to your phone calls, Frank, Rita, among others, just stay there for 1 second because I want to follow up with Lynn Frieda from CMAC on this. When I said earlier, you know, what's going to look different? I mean, CMAC is not going to look dramatically different, but some of, you know, what people are going to be doing. What's the venue going to have that is going to be different that will allow for a zero waste movement there?
So we are going to streamline the process of disposing your waste at the venue. We'll have volunteers that Impact Earth is providing, and they're working with Finger Lakes Community College, which CMAC sits on the campus of, to provide volunteers at each of those receptacles. So there won't be trash bins all over the place. We're going to probably scale back a little bit, and so that way the patrons have to seek out where they're going, but then also we'll have the volunteers there to assist them.
Okay, and a lot more opportunities to then recycle and probably to be educated to some degree, yes?
Yes, definitely.
How much is that half the effort at these events or these festivals, Cassidy?
It definitely is a big part of what we do. Education is important for what we do and in the zero waste evolution. The biggest thing that I find and that we have found through all of our events is that people are interested. Most of the time they come up and they say, okay, I have 5 things in my hands. Now, where do I put them? You know, and sometimes, you know, of course, not every single person is going to want to take the extra 30 seconds and sort them. And of course, you know, if somebody just puts everything in the landfill, that's why we have volunteers standing there and we will properly move everything into the correct receptacle. But honestly, you know, everyone is always excited from kids to adults. Like you said earlier, it really hasn't been a struggle for either of the ages. You know, kids and adults alike are interested in the work and learning about what zero waste is.
It's just part of it is just a culture change, getting used to it. Let me get Frank in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Frank.
Hi, this is a great program. I just wanted to get some thoughts on Zero Waste Committee. I started about 8 or 9 years ago with the Sierra Club, and we did a lot of things. We worked with a lot of groups, the city, businesses, and there is, echoing one of the comments, is that a lot of people are very interested in this. Also, the article that you talked about, Evan, when you started out, 30 million pieces of plastic found on uninhabited South Pacific Island. I mean, it's amazing. We're finding this. We're finding plastics in the Arctic, an incredible amount of plastics in the Arctic. And on local experience, we worked with Greentopia for several years, making it a zero waste event. And that took a lot of planning, especially with the composting, you know, getting everything out, and a lot of volunteers, a lot of volunteer effort, because people need to be constantly educated about how to sort these things properly. And that was a big part of what we did, is trying to educate that certain things can go certain places. There are, you know, like in Monroe County, we have an incredible facility, the Eco Park, mm-hmm. which gets rid of a lot of stuff. And it's hardly used by the public. I think one person said one time, 1% of the public is using Eco Park, which is for entire Monroe County. And this is hazardous waste, a lot of e-waste. And I wish that's one thing that Monroe County is doing really well, and I wish they would put more people back on the job and get more of that stuff taken out of our community. So those are some thoughts. We did a lot of stuff that people really are interested in. And that one comment about straws is really interesting. I was just reading an article. How many incredible, just if we got rid of plastic straws out of you know, when you compile all these little bits of plastic, these micro that are getting into our water, these microfibers, all the stuff that's getting into what we're finding in our water, can make a lot of difference if we stop that.
Well, Frank, thank you. Thanks for the work that you've done, and that's just another great perspective on, you know, Frank saying yes, when people learn they want to do it. As for the Eco Park, I've used it. I mean, who doesn't have something in their home that you go, what am I going to do with this? And then the question becomes, can you get rid of it? Well, anybody can chuck it in the garbage or find a dumpster for it, but can you find it to do a way to do it in a way that isn't damaging? So, Frank, thank you for that. I appreciate that. Robert in Fairport is next. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
One thing that's kind of interesting about this is New York City tried an experiment to reduce the number of trash cans in the subway system, and backtrack from this just a couple of months ago. They were trying to run an experiment to see if people would throw away fewer items and keep the place cleaner, but they found that it didn't work. And I'm kind of curious if the CMAQ people are even aware of that.
Interesting. And I haven't seen the story, Robert, but the premise is that people, what are they, just tossing garbage on the ground if there's not receptacles?
They remove garbage bins from 39 of the 400 stations, thinking that it would deter people from bringing trash into the system. And the approach that's being talked about here is a kind of a similar idea, and I just think that New York State Parks have tried this too, and I don't know if that really deters people from bringing trash with them, and I wonder if it just makes the problem worse because people can't find a trash container to actually throw out real trash, and it didn't work in the subway system in New York City.
All right, AMNY.com reporting, and Robert, thank you, confirming that story, the MTA ending the trash can removal pilot program in the subway stations. They said it did not work, that the idea was that without trash cans, riders would be encouraged to carry their garbage with them, appropriately disposing of their refuse and recyclables at another time and place. But they didn't do that. They said they were gratified. Tom DiNapoli said, gratified the MTA took the 5 years, recognized the need to end this controversial experiment that showed little to no improvement. So I don't know. I mean, that's sort of a contained environment. It's an interesting story, Robert. Does it make you worry at CMAQ that people are, if they can't find a garbage can, that they're either going to hold it, they're going to find the right place for it, are they going to drop it on the ground? What do you think?
Well, I think already they drop it on the ground quite often.
Okay.
So hopefully that won't be the case. And I know that Impact Earth has provided several examples of different festivals and events that they've done that they have really seen a change. So we're really hoping that that will be the same case at CMAQ.
Okay. What do you make of the story in New York City, Cassidy?
I think it's an interesting example. I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting. I'm going to look more into it. But one thing that I would say is that removing the trash cans altogether, to me, wouldn't really be a solution for us. The idea of decreasing the amount of waste stations at CMAQ is purposeful just so people are more aware of the stations themselves, and then there will also be people there as volunteers to educate them on the system. But something that Lynn pointed out is that we have a lot of examples where, you know, we've gone in and the venue has said, you know, we normally have 100 trash cans and it's always disgusting on the ground. And we say, we don't think that that is going to be what happens when we're done with the festival. And it hasn't been so far. So far, you know, we might take 100 trash cans and turn them into 10. 10, not just trash cans, but waste stations. And then people are always looking for those stations when they're at the venue because they see them when they walk in, they see them when they are walking around, and then they're also being educated as they're there. And I know Lynn and I have been working together to put together marketing materials so that make sure that concert goers know that it's going to be a zero waste event and that people will be there to help with the education system.
Are you replacing, you know, if you went from 100 to 10, are you replacing any of the other with recycling stations? I mean, 10, I guess, waste, you call them what, waste stations?
Mm-hmm.
Are you replacing that option to throw, you know, to throw something away, quote unquote, with something else that is recycling, or is it just fewer stations generally?
So it's a little bit of both. So normally most places we go, there's just trash cans. There's not even recycling receptacle.
Right.
And so we're proposing, and we have done so far, that you decrease the number of actual bins and then you replace them with full waste stations, which include composting, recycling, and a smaller landfill bin.
Okay. Back to the phones we go. And this is, let's see here, Rita Claire in Rochester. Go ahead. Do I have that right?
Yes, thank you very much. And thank you for having this program. I think it's so vitally important to our environment and our city. And I congratulate your speaker on beginning to work with the schools. I hope that spreads to every school in our county and also the businesses. For example, recently my husband and I were at a nearby cafe, a syndicated cafe, and we ordered some iced coffees. And they were delicious, and we drank them, but they came in recyclable plastic glasses. And there was no place to recycle them in this cafe. All they had was one trash bin. And so we looked at each other, and we said, well, we're taking these home and putting them in our trash bin. So I think a lot of work needs to be done on that. The other thing I just wanted to comment on is there's so much garbage in our county, and it's everywhere. I'm an avid hiker. I hike all the county parks and woodlands, and I also go down to Turning Point Park and hike down there. And you look in the river, it's so sad. It's just so sad. I don't know what one person can do. What I do is I carry a plastic, recyclable plastic bag with me and pick up what I can that's recyclable, mostly, you know, glass bottles and aluminum cans and things like that. But I see during the year garbage trucks that come and pick up the trash around our community. I see them going down 390, 490, and I see trash flying out of them and landing on the sides of the road. The trucks are just inadequate, and I would love to see some legislation to address that issue. They might be on their way to the landfill, but half of the trash they picked up is on my county road. And it's criminal. It's just literally, it's criminal. It's my comment.
Now, Rita Claire, thank you. I remember when I worked in West Virginia, driving country roads in West Virginia, how beautiful it is and how often I would drive some of these rural roads going, I cannot believe how much garbage is on the side of this road. How can you have something this beautiful and have so much garbage out? And I'm hopeful that eventually that sort of changes, but maybe there is some human nature there. I'm also wondering, you know, at a place like CMAQ, as you mentioned, Lynn, you know, at the end of a concert, of course, there's garbage around. What's going to be different now? Are you going to have crews when you pick up what's left on the ground and then take them to the proper potentially recycling container as opposed to just saying, here's a garbage bag, pick it up?
Yep. We will have Impact Earth volunteers will actually be throughout the lawn and throughout the venue, the entire show to kind of help pick up. As of right now, our cleaners don't come in until after the show. So having that, those volunteers in there to help divert and put it in the right receptacle during the show, we're hoping will help. And then also educating our cleaners at the end of the night to also put the items in the proper receptacles.
Alexis wants to know if ticket prices are going to be higher at CMAQ or if there is a surcharge for the extra effort to do this.
There is not. Ticket prices are actually driven by the artists, so that will not be a part of it. But it is part of our initiatives. We call it Rock On Responsibly, where we give back to our community. We have our sustainability initiative. We have a designated driver program where you receive a complimentary bottle of water. So CMAQ itself actually is a not-for-profit. And so we have some great sponsors and community members that help make programs like this possible.
Jeff in Hilton writes to say, do different genres of music concerts leave more waste than others? For example, does a Garrison Keillor show leave less waste than a rock concert? Which type of concert is the worst, and could that information be published to encourage the attendees to improve their behavior?
Well, definitely a Garrison Keillor show would be different. What they consume there is also a little bit different, as there's not really an intermission where they're consuming multiple beverages or going to get food as often. And it tends to be, I would say, the size of the crowd. If it's under the shell, people are a little bit more contained. But when you have 15,000 people and 10,000 on the lawn, regardless of the show, but I would say probably the country concerts and rock concerts where there's a lot of alcohol consumption, there tends to be more waste left on the ground.
You got The Who and Tom Petty are some of your big headliners this year. Are they sold out, by the way?
They are sold out.
They're sold out. There's going to be some leftover. You think those are great opportunities. They're going to be packed. Those are great opportunities to start changing people's mindset, right?
Yeah, definitely. And as I mentioned, Dave Matthews is kicking off the season, and they already kind of have that environmentally friendly mindset. So we're hoping that that kind of kicks it off, and we have a diverse lineup. So it will be interesting to see how the different genres of music and different demographics that come in, how they respond.
Country music fans, don't take this lying down. Don't be the biggest polluters. Come on. We're gonna change some of that perception. And Cassidy Putney of Impact Earth, you had mentioned earlier that some of the festivals, you work with a lot of different festivals, mm-hmm. a lot of different single day events or weekend events, and you have seen, you know, this is not just marketing pablum, that you have seen real change.
Absolutely. For every single event that we do, we have a zero waste report. And so we're now going into year three of some festivals where we're saying, you know, we really do think that this year will be above 95% landfill diversion when they were starting out when we first got there. And it was, you know, 60, 70% or sometimes even less. And that has a lot to do with us also working with vendors and making sure that, you know, in order to be a part of the festival, you have to have certain packaging into to-go containers at the festival to make sure that we know how to deal with that waste.
Here's an email from Carol who sent this morning. She said, I'd like to mention another example. Ganondagan's Native American Dance and Music Festival will be held this year, July 22nd and 23rd. Thousands attend, yet little trash is generated. At the event in the main area, there's a special tent manned by Native Americans. All the trash barrels are brought there. While the festival is going on, trash is sorted for recycling and for composting. And Carol says, I've heard at the end of this two-day event, the result is about 1 to 2 regular-sized trash bags. That's all. Well, it would not surprise me of our friends out at Ganondagan and some of the ethos of our friends who've been here long before we have, respecting this land. So thank you for that, Carol. And it's just a great example. I mean, Kevin, I think maybe a good way to close this conversation is, yes, Brighton as a school district is aiming to go zero waste. We've heard great stories from CMAQ's efforts. It'll be interesting to see what happens this year. I also think about what one of our callers, Rita Claire, was saying, just about, you know, hiking at Turning Point Park in different places and being disappointed in seeing trash. And it makes me wonder, I pick up my son from school at the Science Center. I see trash cans outside. Do they have recycling? And they may, by the way, our friends at the Science Center. I don't know the answer. But wherever we go, we should probably be asking questions, not in maybe an aggressive way, but just saying, hey, you want to bring more bins out? I mean, we probably could all ask those kind of questions, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they're great questions. I mean, that story about the MTA and the New York City subways, they didn't put receptacles in. They eliminated everything. They didn't give people an option. They didn't give them a choice. People say to me all the time, kids these days, and I said, you're darn right, kids these days. They volunteer more. They achieve at a higher level. They study harder. They manage the pressures of the world in a different way than anybody before them has. And they are more environmentally conscious than any generation before them. They will drive this. They will lead the way. So other places should be thinking about how to let kids have that opportunity.
Kevin McGowan just dropped the mic to end the hour. It's perfect. Dr. McGowan's the superintendent of the Brighton Central School District. Now, that's nice, though, because we get these stereotypes, and I'm really glad to hear that, especially as a parent of a 5-year-old who amazes me all the time. you know, how socially conscious he is. He's always picking up garbage. We'll be hiking out at Mendon Ponds. He'll say, Dad, we got to pick up that garbage. That's in their DNA until we take it out of them. So good luck at Brighton. Thanks for being here, Dr. McGowan.
My pleasure as always.
Our thanks to Lynn Frieda at CMAC. See you out there this summer, and good luck on the Zero Waste Initiative there.
Thank you very much.
And our thanks to Cassidy Putney of Impact Earth. You want to contact them one more time online where?
ImpactEarthInc.org.
It's INC. Good luck to you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Much more connections coming up.